Welcome to Teaching Writing, Ideas and Strategies. In this week's episode, I'm going to answer three things that grad supervisors wanted to know when I was talking to them at a workshop. Those three things? Question one, how can students in your lab become more efficient at producing articles? Question two, how can we give feedback to students? And question three, English is an additional language, students. What strategies can we use to help them learn to write? And here's the spoiler alert. Here's what I said. Number one, students need to learn to read from models of academic discourse that you provide for them, from published articles. Number two, they need to learn to edit their work in stages according to a levels of edit approach. And number three, they need to learn to work with others. They need to benefit from peer review.
So how do you get to be more efficient? First thing I would say is, do you have like a set of journals you tend to go to, you tend to publish in? So the first thing I would do is I would try to take either past publications that the group's been successful with or sample articles from some of those journals. And first thing I would do is annotate. I've done consulting work with financial corporations on how to help their people write faster and better. We're able to, in about 8 hours, we're able to take somebody from on the verge of being fired to being capable. The way I've been able to do that is to say, there's a very specific genre you're supposed to produce. Your supervisor isn't able, doesn't have the language to communicate to you specifically what it is they want you to do. They're just frustrated that you're not doing it. I interpret what the supervisor's telling them. And one of the things that we do is we look at the supervisor's writing. We say, this person has published this. They clearly think their own work is good. There's something they're doing there. Let's figure out first what it is that they're doing. And then let's do what they do. And then see if they criticize themselves. They never do. Because they know what they want done. They just can't quite articulate it in a way for that person to sort of follow and so on. So the first thing is get them a model, several models, and then try to point out to them specifically. So we did a study of titles in journal articles a few years ago for some AI kind of thing we were trying to do. And there's some journals in science journals which have topic titles. The title of the article is the topic of what the article's about. In some journals, they've switched to titles are argumentative. There's a verb in there, and the title is the argument, the main point that the articles make. You should tell the students, see the titles for our articles? What's in them? Is there a verb in them? Who wants that? They don't want that. They just want the topic. So, fine. Then you take a look at the abstract. Is there an abstract? How long is it? How long do they tend to be? What's the range there? How are they structured? There's different ways to structure abstracts. How are yours structured? And then you just work your way through the pieces. So I would take the articles apart piece by piece and say, in this piece, you do this. In this piece, you do this. And they have to master the skill for each of those pieces. So to improve efficiency in your lab, I would take one person and I would make them the abstract writer. And they would have to write every abstract. They would have to the first draft of every abstract. What you would do is you then have it's almost like a team thing. You'd have a second person. So if that person is not able to or busy or can't do it, the second person can do it. And they're getting trained to be the first person. Those people have the skill set for that specific little piece of text, and they can toss those out in about 2 hours. So that's one thing. So first of all, do they have models of what specific models to what your lab needs? Number one. Number two, can you divide and conquer within the lab? Ultimately, you want everyone to have all the skills as they graduate, but in a short term, that you can get started on that by getting an individual to have one really good skill. So someone can really do the visuals and can figure out what the visuals are needed, has studied the visuals that are typically produced, and can make those things. Once they're good at that, they can transition over to another section and add that the next one to their level. But they don't get another one until they get good at that one. The other thing you have to watch for is within those journals, there's different kinds of articles, and at first glance, people aren't really aware of that. There is the research kind of article genre, but then there's some other kind of genres in there. Help them see the difference between those things, and then as they get master one and they go to another one, they realize it's not like this. They go, it's subgenres within a particular journal. What I'm trying to say is this. They don't know how to read articles, so they have to be taught to read them specifically. So I call it reading rhetorically. Read for the argument. Read for why is that sentence there? So if you look within most journal article introductions, there'll be a sentence in there that has the main claim of the piece. Have them find that in the models, highlight it and point it out to them, and then give them another one, say, what's the main claim in this? And the first thing they should do is only look at the introduction. If their eyes go anywhere other than the introduction, this is the old school English system, you take a yardstick and slap their wrist, right? don't look even there. It's only in the introduction. You just only three paragraphs you need to read to find this. Find me that sentence. And they go, okay. So then they learn that's where it is, A. B, it's always there. And there's really only two places it can be, at the end of that second paragraph or at the start of the third one. That's the kind of thing, if you want to get fast, figure out the structure of these things. There tends to be typical structures, and then produce the structure. It's not creative, but it is efficient. Yeah, okay. So first thing here is to differentiate. So who is the feedback coming from? So we all think that we need to do everything.
No, you don't.
What we're really trying to focus on, and there's a book, Peer Review for Grad Students. So how do you set up peer groups for graduate students to give each other feedback? The key thing there is what kind of feedback are they able to give each other, and what kind do they not have enough background knowledge for, and so on. So we'll talk in the presentation a little bit about what's called levels of edit. It was developed at the Jet Propulsion Labs in California, and they have like 10 or 11 levels or stages that you'll go through when you look at a document. Before they publish a document, it's been looked at 10 times, each time for one thing. So one level of edit is only looking at the visuals, tables, graphs, and so on, making sure there is a caption, the caption is structured correctly. When you've gone through the document, all the captions are there, they're done right, and they're done consistently. And then you go back and you look for something else as you go through it. One way to do that is to make it clear to students, here's the things you need to check for, we're going to work through in your document, and here's some things you might be able to handle on your own, here's some things you might be able to do for someone else, and here's some things we're going to have to spend time with. So my point is, you don't have to do it all. You figure out which pieces need you and which pieces don't. We got 84 grad students last year to use the program Grammarly. They looked at 36 million words and 66,000 changes that we made. Grammarly is better than you at identifying comma mistakes, but you feel you have to do it, right? People feel compelled to do something that they're horrible at. Don't mark grammar errors. Tell them to run their draft through Grammarly. That is a huge efficiency gain for very little money. So that's what I would say is, don't do stuff, A, you're not good at, and B, you don't need to do. So figure out what you do need to do, though, and then that becomes your focus. That's the piece that you're bringing to it. Especially if you're working at the start of their careers, I would say that one of the more important things is scope. Scope of the project, scope of the piece, the article. If you look at those introductions to research articles, they're going to go from a broadish scope real fast down to the specific claim that that research is making. Have them study those things, how fast they go from those bigger, what Swales calls identifying the research territory. What are we talking about here? Restoration ecology, peat bogs, carbon sequestration in peat bogs. And then there's different kinds of peat bogs. And then there's a specific one. And we did this one in Northern Ontario. From that big issue, whoosh, right down in six sentences. They'll spend way too much time out there, and you have to get them right down here fast. And they're not good at that, so that's a skill, and that's what you bring. Grammarly is not going to help you with that one. So let's do stuff that we do need you for, which is scope. You can't buy that. That is what you bring. That is one of the many things you bring, but that is like a key thing they don't have, and only you can really do that. And then I would be thinking hard about not just yourself, but your program. Different programs around the institution have adopted different strategies to try to systematize imparting this knowledge. So you figure out within your program, what's the answer? Is it more informal? So there's periodically been a group of kinesiology grad students who form a PhD writing group. Do you just need to sponsor those people, buy them coffee or something, have somebody from one of the writing centers come by? Maybe that's all you need to do. There's different options. But the whole Grammarly study came up because the chair of physics emailed and said, listen, this is really working for me. And so I said, well, let's see if it works for a bunch of bigger groups of people. And then let's figure out how we can get that paid for. So try to think in those terms as well. My issue with talking about this is you really have to know who you're dealing with, because some people are really, really good, even if maybe their third language and they're awesome. Yes. Others, it's their second language and they're not awesome, right? So the key thing I would say is that you have to have a long time span here. So that kind of language skill development is going to not be weeks or even months. It's going to be years. So that's one thing to keep in mind. Second thing is, what other resources can you use that aren't you? So you look around. I can show you. Then you've got books. Then you've got options for writing groups. So there's the curricular, a course, and the co-curricular, other events that are happening. The tricky part is trying to figure out, we call it, in our business a diagnostic test. So you get a sample of their writing when they enter the program, and you look at that and you say, what are we seeing here? So how do we set up a program that leads from one to another to another? You've got to get peer in there somehow, and you've got to use the group, because there's a huge amount that they're going to learn, not just from writing, but from reading. So get them reading other students' stuff and responding to it. And then what that shows them is what they don't know, because the comments that they then make, they can't make very good comments because they really don't understand. And that tells them, there's some things I don't get here. So if you've got a model of a paper, and this is how it's supposed to be structured, and you sort of show them that structure, then they can take that structure and apply it to this other text. They'll see things that are there, and they'll say, I'm not sure if this is your main claim or if this is your main claim. And even if it is, you need to be clearer or mark it clearer that that is the main claim of the piece. Maybe move it, maybe highlight it, whatever. And so that's their feedback. Then they look at their own writing and go, I didn't put a main claim in there. I didn't signal it. And then they quickly change that. And guess what? You didn't have to mark it because they did their thing. So you want to set up the circumstances that allow that to happen. Whether it's a curricular thing or a co-curricular thing, neither here nor there, that it happens is what matters. But you're teaching them to read very specifically in a very technical way, these kinds of things. So you got to learn to read, and then you have to apply that to your own writing. Yeah, well, so you go through, you proceed through your levels of edit down from a rough draft, and then you take out all the things that's obvious, a commentary, an external reviewer is going to point out. You take those away. And then what's left then is going to be, they'll be interested to see what's left to comment on. Now, it could be a gap in the lit survey. They didn't look at some other pieces. So the external person's pointing it out to them. And I think that's fairly legitimate, happens fairly often. So they have to then go back, repeat that lit survey stage a bit, add in those references, maybe qualify their claims a bit. That's the point of the review cycle, is to get that kind of stuff to come up. So the question is, don't make it so that the revisions are obvious and should have been done beforehand. So your levels of edit should take that out. Grammarly spell check is done. So there aren't obvious grammar errors. The reviewers can't say things about the standard of English that's in the document. All right, so don't try to fix everything one time. You have to have levels of edit approach. You want to be strategic about what you're responding to when. So spent early in their career, they're just going to get them pointed north. They don't know east, west, or they're just going to get them going in the right direction at least, right? So the bigger, grosser kinds of things. Later on, you can get into the nuances of it. And as I just mentioned, I think writing introductions is one of the most difficult things, and especially framing the claim that you're making. You get a lot of feedback on that from the review cycle sometimes. You can't claim that. Your evidence, your data doesn't show that, blah, blah, blah. So that's where you need that's where you need the prof, the researchers involved. And then what you really want to do is for each student that comes in, figure out what is it that they know about, how good are they at writing now? How good do they have to be? Those are the outcomes. And then how do we get from A to B? So what is that student going to need?
Thanks for listening. My name is Roger Graves. You can follow this podcast at rogergraves.podomatic.com. You can contact me at roger.graves@ualberta.ca. And I'm on Twitter @RogerGraves.